First of all, let's talk about your Twitter feed. That's how I was made aware of you. How do you go from tweeting shots of the Earth through the windows of the International Space Station? How do you follow that up when you get back to Earth?
Well, that's a good question. It's don't have the same spectacular views. However, the spaceflight experience continues when you get back to Earth. My whole time I've been trying to share with people what it's like to live and work in space. For me, Tom Marshman, exactly the feelings I'm going through. And those unique feelings continue post-flight. What a rainfall feels like after I've spent 5 months looking at storms from 250 miles away, looking down on them again. And what it feels like to finally be back where I can hear and feel running water and to be tucked up under the clouds, feeling the storm. It's a very unique perspective that few human beings have the privilege or the opportunity to experience, and so I want to share that. There's been some rehabilitation process, for lack of a better word, that we go through as our bodies recover from space flight and get used to living in Earth's gravity again. So I've tried to share that as well, because that's kind of a fun process.
Yeah, and it's sort of behind the curtain for those of us who don't have that experience.
Yeah, exactly. So just doing my best to put that out as much as possible.
Let's talk about the recovery for just a little bit. You just cleared a couple weeks ago the 45-day mark, and you said you were almost back to normal. Tell us about how it's going.
It's going well. What's still lacking is a little bit of stamina I don't have that I had pre-flight. So I'm working on that. My bones are not back to normal yet. Your bones absorb a little bit inside your body while you're in space because gravity is not always there to keep the muscles tight and keep pulling on the bones. So I'm rebuilding bone right now that I'm back on Earth, and that'll probably take a few months for that to come back to normal.
But you can get completely back to normal.
Almost everybody gets completely back to normal, yes. I don't know if it's been documented that everyone has, but that seems to be the trend. It seems that we've solved the bone loss problem. We have some bone loss while we're up there, but less than we used to have. It's not quite 2% per month of bone mineral density loss that we used to have. But so I'm still going through that final phase of recovery right now. I don't feel that right now. One thing I can tell is my eyesight changed, and that's a new phenomenon that's newly discovered phenomenon of how people's eyesight can change.
What happened to it?
The shape of my eye changed, and so it's called a hyperoptic shift, but what that means is I can see better far away, but I can't see as well close up, and so I wore contacts before I flew, so they actually had to reduce my prescription a little bit so that I can wear my contacts and still work at the computer, that sort of thing.
And now you're taking the Russian Soyuz capsule to get to the space station. Can you compare that to the shuttle for us?
Oh, yeah. They're as different as night and day. You know, Soyuz is tiny. Three of us, it's like sitting in the front seat of a VW Bug in your spacesuits, the three of us crammed in there. There's a little living space that you can open a hatch and get into another little compartment that's similarly small. But it's not intended for people to live and work in. It's intended to transport people from the Earth to a destination like the space station. And it is very good at doing that. It's very reliable. It is the safest way to space that humans have come up with. And we marvel at the at how robust it is. The Russians don't fix something if it's not broken. So they've kept things that work. They add on. They add computers on the inside, so it's digitally up to date, electronically up to date on the inside. Still got its big old valves and pipes, which we operate to make sure we can control our atmosphere. So it was actually a real privilege to fly in it. It was more like probably like flying what it would have been like to fly in the Gemini days in this tiny space. So it was a great adventure and a real privilege to fly it, and we're very impressed by it.
What is it like returning to Earth on the Russian capsule?
That was the highlight of my spaceflight career, except for the spacewalk. It was great. So you come away from the space station, And the Soyuz has this rocket on the end of it that burns, and that's to slow you down so Earth's gravity can grab you again and bring you down. Then it's about a 45-minute process as you start falling towards the atmosphere. And during that time, that rocket comes off. So it's a series of explosions when the back end of the Soyuz and the front end, that little extra living piece, come off. So basically the spacecraft is coming apart because all that's left is the three of us and our little landing portion with a heat shield pointed towards the atmosphere, and that's where the way they want you. You do have a slow tumble as you come into the atmosphere. You can see I had a great view out the window. I could see the Earth's horizon as it slowly came up closer to us and as we slowly tumbled. And then when you hit the atmosphere at over 18,000 miles an hour, the friction from the upper reaches of the atmosphere start to really rip away at the outside of the spacecraft. And it gets up to about 3,000 degrees, and I could see parts of the heat shield coming off and flying by me on the window. And then the window gets black, and I can't see anything. Can't see anything anymore. At that time, you can't talk to the ground either because of the ionized gases around you disrupt all the signals. We feel a lot of pressure in your chest, 4 Gs, four times the force of gravity, pressing it on your chest. I found it was hard to breathe, actually, and that lasted for about 5 minutes. But when you come out from the other side of that, you're way up high in the atmosphere, all the heat has gone away, and the parachute opens. And that is the wildest bronchobucko I think I've ever been on, because you can feel yourself spinning and whipping back and forth at the end of that parachute as it decelerates you in the upper reaches of the atmosphere. Then things calm down for a bit. You settle under your parachute, and we're just watching our instruments, keeping track of our altitude, and you're setting yourself up for the thump down, is what they call it, instead of a splashdown, because we land on the ground in Kazakhstan. The best description I've heard is it's like two explosions followed by a car crash.
Wow.
As the spacecraft fires its retro rockets, fires some pyros under your seat to lift your seat up so a big spring hydraulic can grab some of the energy when you hit, and then you hit the ground. It's just a huge knock, kind of like being rear-ended in a car. You know, if you're in traffic and it's ever happened to you, that's what it feels like. We tipped over once, we rolled, and then the outer shell of the spacecraft had come off, so I could see out the window again. I looked out the window, and my face was about 5 inches from blades of grass, and that was all I could see was the Earth itself. But it really feels like the Earth is coming up to smack you.
What's going through your mind when you look out the window and see that grass?
It was wonderful. I actually laughed because while you're in space, you miss feel of wind, the smell of grass, the sight of a horizon with the clouds above you, rain. Those very natural things are something that you miss very much. And that just encapsulated for me everything I love about the Earth. It seemed like I couldn't smell it, but I could see it, and it was right there in my face, as if the Earth came up to slap the back of the spaceship and say, "Here you go, Tom. This is what you asked for." And just a very tiny view of this planet that you love so much.
Now, you've been to space twice. You're in your early 50s. Do you think you'll ever return to space again?
Well, that's a good question. It's possible. I need to pass my physical each year, so I'm trying to take care of myself. That might be the biggest barrier to me flying in space again. However, there are some astronauts older than me, so I think there's a good precedent set, so maybe I'll have a chance to go again. But basically, there are a lot of, about 46 astronauts now. Some of those have never flown in space or waiting for their first time. There's a lot of talent out there, so they need to get up in space. So I'm back at the end of the line again, and I'll continue my job of supporting human spaceflight, which is 95% of what an astronaut does, is work with their colleagues to help them with their spaceflight.
Yep.
And just hope for another assignment.
What kinds of things do you do when you're on the ground?
Well, about 30% of our time continues to be training. So that's flying in the T-38 jets, working in simulators, practicing spacewalks. They have a big pool you may have heard of with the entire space station submerged in it, or a mock-up of it. We practice in there. We practice working the robotic arm. That's a manual skill that has to be maintained. The rest of the time, there's various ways that an astronaut can support human spaceflight. We can either work with spaceship designers so that we give the crew input as to what works to make a crew effective and what doesn't. Because I have an MD, I might be working on some of those aspects of spaceflight, making sure that we have the healthcare facilities on board the station and the ground support that we need to keep a good medical front there to keep everybody healthy on board. CAPCOM, you may have heard of that position. That's an astronaut that works in mission control and is the voice of mission control for the crew on orbit. I've done that before, and I might go back to doing that. So there's a wealth of things that you can do to support your crewmates.
Now, this last time you were in space, you actually took part in a very rare unplanned spacewalk to fix an ammonia leak on the space station. Can you tell us about that?
Except for the birth of my daughter and for the day I got married, absolutely the most exciting thing possible. Particularly this time, because we didn't know it was coming. We found out about a day and a half before we were going out the hatch that there was even a problem. We never thought that the ground would let us do this. But within a day and a half, typically they say it takes at least 9 days to get the ground and everybody ready to go out and do a spacewalk. And usually we spend months getting ready for it. But here we did it in a day and a half, mostly because of the great work done by the ground to get us ready. And so it was with a huge delight. My heart was in my throat to a certain degree as well, because suddenly we found ourselves staring out the hatch with just your helmet on. So it's just a few inches away from your face is the vacuum of space and the incredible radiation of the sun. Temperature is greater than 300, around 300 degrees above zero and down to negative 200 below zero. So it was just astonishing. But we were thrilled. We almost couldn't speak. We were so happy to be out there. As a matter of fact, Chris Cassidy went out the hatch first. I followed him, and we just had to shake hands just out there. It was one of our first actions, grab each other's gloved hand once we came out the hatch, that we had gotten that far, at least, had gotten out the hatch. We had a coolant leak discovered just a day and a half prior, and the coolant is ammonia. There's a coolant that only exists on the outside because ammonia is so toxic to humans, but it's such a wonderful heat transfer liquid that they just stick it on the outside of the space station. And one of those loops had a leak in it, and you could see it. You could see we discovered little white particles kind of coming off the space station. One of the Russians actually saw it first, came flying over and said to our commander, Chris Hadfield, he said, "Chris, я вижу фейерверки." And he said, I see fireworks. And we looked out there, and it kind of looked like fireworks, just gleaming little sparks coming off of one part of the space station. So we spent several hours that day getting photos and video, realizing it was probably ammonia, but trying to figure out where it was coming from. And the ground used our information that we gave them to evaluate and said, we think we know where it is. And before it all leaks out, we need somebody out there to confirm where it is and try to fix it. So it just so happened that Chris and I, Cassie and I, had done spacewalks together on our prior shuttle flight. We'd been in that same place, the space station, and I think that all made it easier for them to say, all right, you two guys are going out there, and you've got less than a day to get ready. And so all the teams got together, and we were able to get out the hatch.
What is it like living on board the International Space Station?
About a 5-bedroom house is the best way to describe it. The construction, though, with the modules, it's about like being in a school bus. Each module is about like being in a school bus. They're stuck together at different angles. And there might be a lot of equipment in there, so it might be a tunnel that you can fly through in one of those modules. But most of them are quite spacious. And there are even places in the space station where you can be hard at work, forget that you're not restrained to anything, and slowly float away from the wall and just have to just kind of be a little frustrated and wait until you float to the other side of the module so you can grab onto something and get back to what you were doing.
And how many people are up there at any given time?
There's almost always six up there, no more than six. Occasionally it drops down to three as the crews switch out. There's not enough parking spaces for the Soyuz, so a crew of three has to leave before the next crew of three arrives.
How has technology changed not only the way you interact with the public, but changed space travel, even in just the time that you've been an astronaut?
I think the most obvious way is technology that was kind of given a boost and an acceleration by NASA, and that is miniaturization. We are constantly having improvements. This is everything we see, you know, with our tablets and our laptops. This is all still fallout from that that effort starting in the 60s. And we continue to use those updates all the time. So it's helped a lot with we have tablets that we use now on board the space station. And it's helped human efficiency a lot. It's helped human safety quite a bit just because we're able to increase our communication with the ground. The material science, which NASA has had a lot to do with their research we've done in zero gravity with materials, has helped a lot to produce more durable, lighter materials. We're working on materials that actually have antimicrobial substance embedded in them, so you don't get any mold growth in them, which is essential for your life support systems. A lot of work has gone into making the materials more robust from a radiation standpoint, so that a solar flare doesn't knock out communication satellites or the home, you know, the spaceship that I live in. So that's all going on right now. I tell you, the area that I think will be the future, though, is when we figure out a way to transport spacecraft more easily and more cheaply. And so an energy source or a means of delivering the energy so we can more efficiently push a spaceship further into the solar system. That'll be a huge leap when that happens, because then all your problems of people living in space for long periods of time, all those problems diminish the faster you can get to your destination. If you can get to Mars in a few months, then you don't have to worry so much about bone loss and radiation and all that.
I know we're coming up on time here, and thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, looking forward very much to getting to Statesville. Going to be there in September. Statesville, where you live, is one of the most beautiful places on Earth, and I can say for a fact that it's immediately recognizable. The deep green of the forest coming over the Appalachians, which only takes a couple of minutes to fly over on the space station, but it's a beautiful, unique place on the Earth, and I can't wait to get back over there.
Dr. Marshburn, thanks very much.
Enjoyed talking to you.